Hello, welcome back to Building Buffalo. Today I am here with Justin Booth and Kevin Heffernan from Go Bike Buffalo. Hey guys.
What's up, Noel?
Howdy.
Howdy. The question is to you guys, what's up? There's a lot going on these days with Go Bike Buffalo and biking in Buffalo. But first of all, I want to say City and State Magazine recently named Justin Booth as one of the 2024 Transportation Power 100. That's pretty cool, man.
We're getting some things done. I guess some people are starting to notice.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just not a Buffalo thing. That's a New York State, and probably a lot of people all over the nation are realizing that Buffalo's onto something, right?
That's what we're trying to go for. I mean, we're stopping the bad highway projects and getting bike lanes put in.
All right. So starting off, with all the advancements in bike-friendly features in Buffalo, is it true that there is an increase in bike fatalities?
Yes, unfortunately, it is. This summer has been one of the worst in memory, but we're not going to know all the data until next year about it. But in Western New York, fatal crashes in 2020 were 14. They climbed to 26, 31, and 42 in 2023. The crashes themselves are on the rise. They went from 676 to 879. Those were ones just involving cyclists or pedestrians. So thousands and thousands of other crashes, car to car, car to property, things are seemingly at a fever pitch right now. And every day our team is trying to work to see laws get passed and funding move to create safer street design so that we can put this to a stop.
So there have been so many advancements. Why are those numbers going up?
I think part of it is the pace in which some of these infrastructure changes are happening. For instance, the city has just begun this past year, which is exciting to see, the implementation of some of the catalyst projects that were identified in the Bike Master Plan. But the Bike Master Plan now is 8 years old. And so sometimes these projects take anywhere 5, 8, 10 years from vision to completion. Meanwhile, people are dying on our streets today. And so, some of the numbers that Kevin was sharing, one of the number one reasons people say, well, we can't do this is because of cost. And while cost is real, we also know that through some Erie County data, that the cost per crash in 2024 dollars is for injuries, people going to the hospital and emergency department visits is over $60,000. And you look at the total average of crashes that have happened in the last 5 years in Erie County being 5,700, that's $350 million that these crashes are costing our municipalities. And so, there's a real cost for us not doing this work and making it happen more quickly.
And I think, it's a public safety issue. And we're very eager to put money into other public safety bins. And this is one where we can address the cause by making the roads safer in the first place so that these crashes and injuries and deaths don't occur.
So we've been talking, I think everybody in the city of Buffalo has been talking speed humps. It's like, whether you're at dinner or having a cocktail, speed humps typically comes up because they're all over the place right now, but there are still a lot of streets that are waiting for them. Is there a moratorium right now on speed humps because of the damage it's doing to fire trucks?
Our understanding is that the city has put a moratorium on them right now. I think there's multiple reasons why they're doing that. But I think it's important to note that there's, speed humps are just one of the tools that we have to slow vehicles down on the street. The city's process has been, I help facilitate that in my neighborhood through our block club. You need 75% of the residents on your street to say yes to wanting them before the city even, gives you the option to have them installed. And so there is a process for them to be selected. And so people, through their lived experiences in their communities, on their streets, have certainly said loud and clear to the city that we want traffic calming measures to happen. Now, are there some drawbacks in some of these choices? Absolutely. And there's other solutions, speed cushions, which very similar to a speed hump, but actually has wheel wells where larger vehicles like a fire truck could go through without actually hitting the speed hump. It's actually better for cyclists. You've seen cities like Portland, Oregon install them in many places because it works on residential streets for all users. You know, there's also many traffic circles, there's chicanes, there's bump outs at intersections, there's lane narrowing, there are a multitude of things. Planting street trees all make a difference in calming traffic on our streets. And so we need to do a better job, I think, as a city, is putting a comprehensive effort in place, not just using one tool across the entire city for every location.
Yeah, that conversation has been so humps or not in the or not crowd. Is like, well, drivers will slow down if we ask them to. They do not. And that was clearly evident in all the people who did opt in for this. The humps were necessary given the amount of carnage on our roadways and the amount of speeding happening down residential side streets. And now you're starting to see, like, is this wearing on fire trucks? I talked to a driver who lives on my street, and he said, you know, there is extra wear on the suspension. Sometimes a tank can get pierced or things like that. And obviously we don't want to hear that, that's a byproduct of this, but that led me to then call other firemen anyway and say, are you even aware that speed cushions exist? They didn't know. So we need to have this conversation on a spectrum. I think Go Bike and the fire department could be arm in arm advocating for these speed cushions. And then you could see the city start rolling those out in the future. And then we've removed this issue of slowing down or damaging fire trucks and keeping the roads safe.
Interesting. New York State legislation passed in 2022 that allowed municipalities to designate whatever streets and roads they wish to be 25 miles per hour. The village of Lewiston opted in, right?
Almost immediately.
Now, was that a surprise?
Well, do you want to talk about the work? You were part of this team before I even got here that moved this through Albany to make it an option available.
Yeah, I mean, so there is a Safe Streets Coalition, New York State Safe Streets Coalition, which has, goodness, probably a couple hundred organizations around the entire state that are working on making our streets safer because of the traffic violence that we're seeing. And so this was one of the key bills, because we know that at 40 miles an hour, if a car hits a pedestrian, they have about a 10% chance of survival. But if a car is going 20 miles an hour, they have a 90% chance of survival. And so speed is really, you know, a key element to making our streets safe and adjusting speed. In the past, you needed state enabling legislation to allow the local municipality to lower the speed limit lower than 30. You know, so this enabling legislation that we were able to collectively pass around the state allows municipalities to opt in. Now, the Department of Transportation is the one that's managing that process. And of course, they made that process a bit cumbersome, having to do traffic studies and how it's going to impact vehicle movement and those types of things, which ignores the traffic violence and safety issues that is why it was actually passed. There are a number of municipalities that have moved forward to advance that. There aren't many in Western New York. There's only Lewiston, but you're seeing the city of Albany do it. The town of Brighton in Monroe County. There's a couple of communities in Westchester, Suffolk, Ulster County. But there aren't a lot. And part of the reason is because the process that DOT has defined of doing this traffic study can sometimes take years and has an expense to do so. Meanwhile, we're seeing these injuries and fatalities happen on our roadways continue to go up. And this is a very simple way to really make our streets safer.
And we all know that if you basically post a 20 mile per hour speed limit, people are going to typically go 25. If it's 25, they're going to go 30. They're always going to go a little bit over. So I think that's smart to bring it down by five. And knowing that people will be going 30 anyways, and not 35.
When the funding is available to redesign and rebuild a street, if you're now talking about a 25 mile an hour street, you can make it narrower, which then you really feel automatically to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we took the 198 from 50 to 30. And everyone was furious and started going 50 again because it was built for 50.
Yep.
So take that 30 mile an hour road and turn it into a 25 mile an hour road by narrowing it even further. And you will see people start to abide by it much more easily.
Yeah. We all know that, like, roundabouts and circles are pretty amazing when you can pull them off. Tonawanda has already embraced the idea on Parker Boulevard with three traffic circles that have replaced stop sign intersections. How can that be done when you basically have such limited space within an intersection of that nature?
First, we should give a shout out to Jim Jones, who was the traffic engineer for the town of Tonawanda, who developed and designed that project, who has since retired and is now Go Bike's traffic engineer for our projects. So Jim deserves a lot of credit for really kind of leading the way in his profession here in Western New York. But we know that, you know, people don't stop at stop signs, at four-way stop signs, ever. But the goal here is not necessarily to make people stop, but to make people slow down and make sure the intersection is safe. And so, yeah, right-of-way is limited. But whether you call it a traffic circle, and maybe is not necessarily the best term, you know, a modern roundabout or residential locations, a neighborhood traffic circle really does a lot to slow cars down, doesn't allow them to go straight through. It makes them go around the circle at a speed in which makes it safer for people to be able to cross the street, for bikes to follow, you know, to follow around as well. And we've seen some cities, again, implement, take out four-way stop signs all over residential neighborhoods. Seattle, Portland are good examples on the West Coast where I've been to, where all the residential streets are now neighborhood traffic circles. But they've done it in a way where first they start out doing a temporary project, just putting out some cones, some paint to show like what actually works. You know, and sometimes when you design something on paper, what actually happens in real life doesn't necessarily pan out. And so having the temporary measures in place to then test out those designs, make sure that, oh, the emergency vehicles can still get through, or there's a heavy bus, you know, a location for whether it's schools or the NFTA to make sure they can still get through, adjust the diameter through the temporary project, making it safe immediately, while then planning for that longer term capital investment. We are then using our resources more effectively, more efficiently, and not wasting them on projects that we know then don't work down the road.
Can we talk a little bit about curb extensions at intersections for pedestrians? For example, what's happening with Linwood, Chippewa, Fillmore, and Niagara?
Yeah, so I'll make sure these are front and center on gobikebuffalo.org so that you can visually see them too. But when we're talking about a spectrum of tools available, curb extension is one that, again, walk down Chippewa, and you see that it is wider into the street. When you are on foot, it gives you less dangerous space to cross. But what it also does is forces a driver to get two hands onto the wheel and make a skilled turn instead of these former, you know, intersections that you see, especially out in the suburbs, where it's very wide. Driver barely needs to touch the brake to turn. These curb extensions also, because of that turn you have to make as a driver, you're going to have everyone in the crosswalk in your front windshield view and not obscured where your mirror is as you come flying through. So it increases safety so dramatically by slowing down cars, forcing them to put effort into their turn, opening up their field of vision, and giving pedestrians less dangerous space to move across. So we think they're excellent, you know. We would love to see more of them, and we're happy to see where they've gone in. It's not just Chippewa, it's Court and Huron has them as well. You actually saw them go in on Linwood when a lot of that got rebuilt. They're on Niagara Street, and you know, hopefully in the future we'll see them on a place like Bailey as that street changes.
I think the only thing I would add in addition to what Kevin said is, if most people don't know this, I didn't actually realize it until I actually got a ticket a number of years ago off hurdle, is that legally you're not allowed to park a vehicle within 20 feet of a crosswalk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for sightline reasons, whether, you know, seeing a pedestrian seeing a car, you know, but oftentimes vehicles park right up to the crosswalk or in the crosswalk or on the sidewalk. And so this is a good way, instead of giving people tickets, utilize design to influence the right behavior so vehicles aren't parking on the sidewalks or in the crosswalks, so we can maintain those safe sight lines so people are safer than crossing the street.
Are there any super bike-friendly public officials that are leading the way in all of this?
Randy Hoke in Hamburg, Sean Ryan in the State Senate, John Rivera in the State Assembly. Probably some others you could think of.
Pat Burke has been very supportive. Yep. in for West Seneca and Orchard Park. We've been doing work with Karen McMahon and Amherst to develop the peanut line. Monica Wallace to expand trails out in Cheektowaga. We're doing a lot of work in Cheektowaga through the State Department of Health grant, and Brian Nowak, the town supervisor there, has been very supportive. You know, so we are seeing, and you know, a lot of our work has really been focused on locations where we have the support from elected officials, because that makes the difference in whether, you know, we're just advocates or whether we're actually working with the community to design our streets to be safer.
Tell me really quickly about the peanut trail.
Mitch Nowakowski in the city as well has been really open to letting us do some pilot projects in his district. And actually answering us when we say, hey, here's your highest crash zones in your district. And it's like, great, how can we tackle it? So kudos to Mitch as well.
Yeah, sorry, I got another question.
Peanut line. What is the peanut line?
So that is a corridor in Amherst that would connect the existing trails at UB to the existing trails out in Clarence. So it is a former rail corridor. The town in the past has tried twice, probably in the last 20 years, to turn this into a trail, but it met some significant community opposition. And so we've been given some resources to give it another try. There has been a lot of public support for it. There is a whole group that is organizing what they call peanut rolls, probably once a month along that corridor. They brought Assemblymember Karen McMahon out there. They've got the support from Jackie Berger, who is, you know, the deputy supervisor in the town of Amherst. And, you know, we were able to work with them as well with a contract with the GBNRTC, because it is identified in the Regional Bicycle Master Plan as a key connectivity component to build our regional trail system. It's only, I believe, 8 miles long, but connects so much together. And while we're still doing the analysis of some of the surveys that we have collected, you know, I would say that we, you know, one of the best survey responses that we've ever done, I think over 1,000 responses, it is overwhelmingly in support of seeing a corridor back there that people can easily access. Now, don't get me wrong, there's some people that not in my backyard, never, no way. And we've certainly gotten plenty of those phone calls with lots of expletives. But there's, you know, we are doing a process which really, you know, focuses on not just listening to the people that live right up against it, but listening to the community as a whole. And of course, you know, all segments of the population there to make sure that we can help the elected officials make an informed decision. We know how much it's going to cost. We know what some of the mitigation measures need to be. If it's privacy, if it's drainage issues, what needs to be put in place to support there, you know, to make sure that they are supportive of making that trail happen. So it's been a really exciting project to advance, and I think it's going to be an important one for the region.
And let me add that it's a former rail bed. It's grass covered now. If you've got a mountain bike in any condition and you're an experienced rider, you can use it, and you're not trespassing when you do. But who that excludes are less confident riders, children, older adults. So there are so many issues when we're talking about our roads are dangerous. These are the kind of projects that we need urgency for to get them up and moving, because our seniors who can no longer drive are being homebound, and what happens to their physical and mental health then? Mm-hmm. Whereas they could hop on a three-wheel bike and be connected to their town again and see their community. And then kids need a safe place to ride. You know, there's alternatives here that could be a shoulder lane on this busy road or a shoulder lane on that busy road. And a lot of parents are going to have a lot of hesitation. But you say, hey, go ride the trail. We know you're not going to get hit by a car there. So these trails and greenways are a big part of what we do, because it provides that safe space for anybody of any ability to get out there. Wheelchair users, too, can't use this grassy path right now. People with a mobility device can't. But if you pave a ribbon of it, they can. They can get back out there and we'll see this connectivity, this physical and mental health improvement.
Like the one in North Buffalo that leads to North Tonawanda. Which is amazing.
Yeah. But. And it's absolutely gorgeous. And there's businesses that have popped up alongside of it. People use it. And guess who opposed it before it went in? The people living next to it. And guess who loves it now? The people who live next to it. So there's always going to be that pushback. But when it does go in, those people end up being like, wow, really great. And a lot of the things that I really feared about it didn't come to fruition.
And I would imagine home values go up.
You don't have to imagine it. They literally do. Mm-hmm.
Why is it so hard to get faded bike lanes and sharrows repainted in the city of Buffalo?
So this has been a longstanding issue that we've been working with the city on for many years. And what we found out in doing research and talking to the city is that they didn't have a separate budget for restriping streets. A street was repaved. Part of the repaving process was to put the paint back down exactly the way it was. And so, you know, we've been advocating with the city. You know, there was a point where our organization was probably painting more crosswalks than the city of Buffalo was. But that has changed over the last couple of years. And I think they deserve a lot of credit, particularly the Department of Public Works, where they now have a $750,000 budget to restripe crosswalks and bike lanes. You know, finally, we've seen Porter Avenue is probably a good example close to where we are here, where the bike lanes were completely faded. You know, that has recently been restriped. We've seen some of the a number of locations restriped. We've seen crosswalks installed all around school zones and school zone signs put in place where that hadn't been there for many, many years. So, you know, budgets are a reflection of our values. And it took a while for, I think, the city to recognize that the community values having safe streets. And so, you know, now that has been a regular part of the city's budget, which has been, you know, sometimes I feel like it's silly that we're fighting for more paint on our streets, but it's such an important part of having a quality of life in the city that we all want.
Justin often reminds the team, we used to fight for sharrows. You know, and then we were fighting for shoulder lanes, and now we're fighting for protected infrastructure. We know paint can't protect you from that speeding driver, that drunk driver, but it has been proven to slow down traffic amongst those decent paying attention drivers. And they do increase safety, and they do welcome more people out to ride. You know, who's actually riding Elmwood Avenue in the parts where they're on a bike lane? It's the highest level of confidence riders. But when you put a bike lane on a Richmond Ave, there's other people who may say, oh, I can handle that. I can do that. I'm going to be away from the cars. I'll ride. And that's the big thing, too. Like, if we open it up, make it more inviting for people to take one bike trip a week that they would have otherwise driven.
And then there's Niagara Street, which is dedicated. And you're looking at so many. Anybody can go on that and feel safe.
And that's where the parents came out of the woodwork saying, now I can ride with my kids. Mm-hmm. We did that temporary project on Forest. There were so many parents just sending pictures saying, I've got a connection to Niagara now. Now we can really get places. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing, too. When we're talking about these lanes, we're building out the Buffalo Bike Master Plan. And when it is finally completed, you wouldn't just have this patchwork disconnected network. You'd actually be able to map it out and say, hey, I could be there faster than driving and I won't have anywhere to park. It'll be great.
So when we talk about mill and overlay, there's a timeline, right? For like, you can go and see which streets are coming up for mill and overlay, which means that if they're set to get a bike lane or a dedicated bike lane, it won't happen until the street is actually getting its mill and overlay. So using Delavan Avenue, for example, which connects Canisius and Delaware Avenue and Delaware Park and the Elmwood Village, I don't know when that is like due for a mill and overlay, but that is like, to me, one of the greatest connectors in the city of Buffalo between a, you know, all of these young students and the rest of their city. So why couldn't we speed something like that up when, as far as I'm concerned, that should be a priority street? Can't we just reprioritize some of these streets, or is that just impossible?
Nothing's impossible. I think this is a good place where we need more people like you, Newell, and others to call their elected officials to, because that is this, you know, the squeaky wheel is important here. You know, I think they all expect Justin to come ask for more bike lanes. But I think it's also important, like, that's a really good project. It was identified in the Bike Master Plan as a catalyst project because it's such a key connector. We've done a really good job in Buffalo of creating north-south routes, but we haven't done a good job of creating east-west routes. And so there's this huge opportunity. I mean, I think the design work that the city's doing for the Middle Main project, connecting from basically the Kensington all the way down to Goodell Street. The last plan that I saw had protected bike lanes at the sidewalk level, which is going to be phenomenally safe for everybody that's out there using it. But then how do we connect people east and west? You know, Delavan is going to be a really important one with the existing bike lanes on Delaware, with the, you know, the some of the existing pieces on Forest and some of the other pieces that the city is talking moving forward. You know, you can, you know, reasonably see in the next couple of years being able to get from Main Street, you know, all the way out to Bailey on Delavan, and then of course all the way west to Niagara Street on Delavan, you know, through the connection on Delaware and Forest. But, you know, these are some of the key pieces. You know, we talk about like having 100 miles of bike lanes in the city, but if there are only bits and pieces that don't connect to each other, it really makes it hard to build that culture where we're seeing more people choose to ride on a consistent basis.
I just want to underline one thing you said, Justin, is you got to call your elected official. I think there is a broad assumption like, oh, they get it. They'll do that. Obviously, Delavan will get done. You know, I briefly worked in an elected official's office, and every time he came in, he said, who called, who emailed? You know, what was it about? And if there were two or three, it automatically moved to the top of the list. Like, well, I'll see what I can do about that. You know, he listened to them all, but as soon as there were a few about a single topic, that became that day's priority, like see what our next steps are. So assuming someone else will call, assuming that elected official also rides or walks, it's not going to get us anywhere. People really need to understand the power they have by visiting offices, emailing them, calling them, to ask for these changes to be prioritized.
So I bike around Buffalo a lot. And when I get downtown, it's definitely a different can of worms. And I think it's a lot, has a lot to do with streets, that like Michigan Elm and Oak, that are thorough, they're speedways.
Elk's a speedway too.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah. And so they're very disruptive. They break up other bike routes. Why can't we do some traffic calming in those on those streets that are so dangerous?
Yeah. So unfortunately, some of those streets, the Elm Oak Corridor, Goodell Street, those are examples of roadways in the city of Buffalo that the State Department of Transportation has jurisdiction over. If you look back historically, those were locations where the state DOT originally had plans to basically create an interloop expressway around downtown, which thankfully did not happen, thanks to some of the advocates, you know, back in the day to stop those projects. But they are still thoroughfares that are designed for one single purpose, which is to move vehicles as quickly as you can from point A to point B. State Department of Transportation uses a metric called vehicle level of service, which is their measure of how much congestion we can tolerate at an intersection during peak travel time from between 4 to 6 p.m. And what we found over the years by using that metric and always striving for that level of service of A for vehicles, it only considers drivers. It doesn't consider the communities in which those roads are going through and the impact that it has on those communities. And so this has been a huge effort to rethink our process for designing our streets and giving DOT a new set of rules. There's two states that have done this so far, California and Colorado, where instead of looking at vehicle level service, it's all about reducing vehicle miles traveled, because we know they've done this through climate legislation. Personal transportation is the number one source of greenhouse gas emissions. And we're not going to get everyone to move over to an electric vehicle tomorrow. And so the way that we can rethink this is by reducing vehicle miles traveled. And then that then puts more funding into creating more communities to be more walkable, more bikeable, and have better transit options to move people around. Just because through their metric, a bus carrying 50 people counts the same as a car carrying one person. Whereas if we talk about vehicle miles traveled, you know, it's really about reducing the amount of vehicle travel, you know, vehicle miles that are being put on our roadways and how we are moving people through these intersections and not just vehicles.
And this is a Karen McMahon bill, right?
Yeah. So Assemblymember Karen McMahon has sponsored it in the assembly. The NFTA has actually provided a letter of support, because it would certainly provide more funding for public transit service. You know, and we don't need to go back too far to look at the great transit service that the city of Buffalo had. You know, we once had great transit service that connected every part of our city. And that's something that we should be striving for again.
I agree. And if you look at the neighborhoods that surround these thoroughfares, these speedways, you don't see small businesses. You don't see a lot of people living in those areas, because there are no conveniences. And I'm convinced it's because of the nature of those roads, those thoroughfares.
70 to 80% of the businesses along our arterials closed within 10 years of the Kensington Expressway going up. So when you're
there, you go.
It doesn't all need to be walking, biking, although that's been proven to make it better for businesses. But when you have slow moving traffic outside your business tends to do better than when you have fast moving traffic.
Kevin, I know you're really hot on this issue, but biking, I mean, I know you are too, Justin, but I see you kind of preaching this one a little bit. Buffalo is a four season, you know, winter biking town. You don't see a lot of people around Buffalo biking. You see the diehards, mm-hmm. and relatively few. How can we make Buffalo a four season biking city?
Sure. I think we're talking a little theoretically right now, right? And I think fun events in the winter that get people out and they realize, like, oh, I didn't freeze, could be a big one. I think my favorite time to ride is the winter when it's below 32. That's the only time, you know, I'm showing up perfectly dry, and it's the air is crisp. You're moving right through it. And it doesn't take much more than a good pair of mittens and then the rest of the things you would have worn anyways, at least in my experience. But it's going to take events to get people out there and try it out themselves. I think you do see far fewer in the winter. It also comes down to, you know, creating better infrastructure that invites it.
if you have a protected bike lane that's not covered in snow because they all got pushed into the shoulder lane, you know, you remove those less confident riders when you bury the shoulder lane in snow.
Is there any dedicated snow removal vehicle that's like literally dedicated to bike lanes?
When enough 311s go in to DPW to plow the Niagara Street cycle track as promised, a pickup truck with a plow comes through. It's perfect width. You know, DPW has those. They're not putting their major plows down it. That's the reason there's not bollards on the Niagara Street cycle track to keep cars from parking in it. It's so that it can be plowed in the winter. So yeah, a pickup truck can do it. There was a time when we thought our Parkside Linden design might go through the winter, and we thought a pickup truck could do it there too. So yeah, it can be done. I think to become a four-season town, we need to look at other four-season towns. Montreal pulls this off. Boston pulls this off. Of course, they're a bit more dense than
UConn
us.
UConn pulls this off.
Yeah.
Finland pulls this off.
I mean, right. It's just a mindset change. You know, when we have people in Erie County, 30% of all trips in a car are a mile or less. And that includes the city of Buffalo, where wherever you're going, you could probably walk, at least in spring, summer, and fall, pretty easily, and people still choose to drive. So when you add in cold temperatures, they're going to drive. So we've got to do a culture change here, and that's on GoBike too. We got to make it.
I was going to say, what's the big winter event that GoBike is putting on?
Powder Keg Festival.
Touché.
Everybody bike down. you know, honestly, something like that, you know, in the summer you would have chose to bike because there would be no parking. Like people who bike to the Outer Harbor concerts or things like that. You know, we need some big major winter event in this town too, that people will still say, you know, there's not going to be parking down there. Let's bike. Mm-hmm. And then they do that one time and they're like, let's bike to the next thing too.
That's right.
So it's just getting people to try it. And I think we can document more of it ourselves in the winter of, you know, not just our network over and over, but getting people to send stuff to us of, yeah, I rode, here's how I did it.
When it comes to the city of Buffalo and smart city technology and infrastructure, choose an animal: turtle, pony, or cheetah.
Can I give the politically, you know, the disclaimer that the city of Buffalo is trying? Yeah. Yes. Before I call them a cross between a turtle and a pony, I think of all the municipalities around here, they're one of the leaders in giving it a shot. But I'll stop there. What do you want to call them? Pass it over to Justin.
No, I agree with Kevin. I think they've done a really good job, and I think you know, I've done a lot of work with the city's Department of Public Works, and I empathize. Like they've are doing a lot with very little. They need more capacity from staff. They just lost another engineer, and you know, I think you know, they've been very supportive, but sometimes it's hard, and the situations that they are put in to both please the public and the elected officials in trying to do what is right, you know. So it's something that, you know, I think, again, you know, budgets are a reflection of our values, and putting more resources into staffing and capacity for the Department of Public Works to maybe turn into a mobility department, which we're seeing in other cities, is really a step that we'd love to see the city move into.
And if you want to sell the city's trying narrative to its population, then they have to see you doing everything you possibly can. And so you've seen on our social media this entire year how pissed off we are about all the cars parked on the sidewalk and how dangerous that is for people in wheelchairs and for children. And when the city looks the other way and tolerates that, it's hard to continue pushing this narrative of they're trying their best. So we have to ticket these cars and get them off the sidewalk. If we really are in financial dire straits, then here's some revenue just sitting right outside City Hall for you. So when they start doing those kind of moves that say, hey, we really are prioritizing the safety of pedestrians, look at, we got all these cars off the sidewalk, then you start to buy in, like, hey, and then they're trying something over here, they're trying something over there. You can buy into this momentum for the city. But if they're still going to tolerate crap like that and cars parked in bike lanes and cars blocking crosswalks, then it's hard to keep pushing that.
Yeah. Well, this has been fantastic. Any last words of wisdom for biking in Buffalo?
I'm always telling people to, you know, consider that one trip per week. You know, the joy that you felt as a kid on a bike does not disappear when you're an adult. You have a right to the road, use it. Get out there and have some fun. And then you're going to start opting into biking or walking much more often because it continues to be fun.
Yeah. I mean, I've been riding with my kids to school, you know, for the last 20 some odd years. And I think the reason why we've always done it is because it is more fun. But, you know, people call me, you know, an anomaly in this town for doing it on a consistent basis. If we were to create more safer streets where more people can do it more often, I think we would see, you know, a lot more people out on the roadways choosing, you know, these healthier ways to move about our city. And it's only going to be good for our health, for the environment, for the economic vibrancy in our business districts, you know, but it comes at a consequence, right? There's choices here. You know, if our goal is to maintain all the street parking spaces, like, we're not going to be able to do this. If our goal is to make sure we're moving cars as quickly as we can from point A to point B, like, we're not going to be able to do this. But we know that we have to do this. If Buffalo is going to live up to, you know, what we're leaning in on as being a climate refuge, we need to start adopting policies and delivering projects that are going to make us that climate refuge that's going to survive and be sustainable into the future.
I agree.
Kevin, Justin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Go Bike Buffalo.